The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guest, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good afternoon and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is successful SOA adoption. What does it take? Our guests for today's show are Peter Kastner, David Buchholz, and Ron Schmelzer. Peter is the Vice President and Research Director, Enterprise Technology with Aberdeen Group. David is the Vice President, Enterprise Architecture and Planning, Sony Pictures Entertainment, and Ron is the Senior Analyst and Founder with ZapThink. Good afternoon, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
So how's the last quarter treating you? You had the first three quarters like flew by. It happened for me.
Well, I know for us, and this is Ron from ZapThink, that we're being extremely busy and just doing a lot of education training and workshops and credentialing and research. People are asking a lot more detailed questions now, more than ever, about service-oriented architecture, and I think that's sort of a good sign that the things are maturing. People aren't asking any more about specifically acronyms and different products. They're asking about how to go about doing it, and so for us, it's extremely busy this last quarter of the year.
This is Peter, and I jump in and say, as an analyst for 18 years and almost 40 years in the industry, that the uptake, the adoption of SOA has been as fast as anything that I've seen in my career. And we're not just talking marketecture here, but people are actually going out and doing it because they really do believe it will make their integration lives better.
And I guess, as David here, I'll jump in and from a kind of a, in the business of it, we're certainly, you know, seeing that and trying to mature a number of our efforts. But at the same time, there's some things in the market that are giving us a little bit of a headache. You know, a lot of vendor cyclone acquisitions, maybe some early bets we made on BPM and where that fits, and you know, core providers that we have acquiring other companies. And then just in the overall perspective, talk about the last quarter, we're a division of Sony. And, you know, a lot of news. Sony's in the news quite a bit, laptop batteries and other things that are, you know, certainly not in our division, but having a trickle-down effect from an economic perspective. And so when you're looking at what are we doing next year in terms of funding SOA and continuing our progress, there's a kind of a new focus in justifying what we're doing. So I think it's very interesting.
Well, we have been talking about SOA adoption, and the success of that basically lies, or in fact, that's the wave out there, that's the news out there, that governance is what is going to make a difference, because we've done all the geek talk, we put all the toys in place, and hopefully they'll all work together. But for it to be totally effective, governance is in question. Now, talking about governance, IT governance was always in place, or at least people were working towards it. They had a mature governance model in place. Are we essentially extending that IT governance model, or SOA governance is a totally different animal? Peter?
Let me start slightly off the question by saying that in the research we did with several hundred global 5,000 companies that was published in June said that basically half of the marketplace was adopting SOA just by using web services. By that I mean that they really didn't have governance in place, policies, rules, nor were they using the capabilities of an SOA middleware suite, such as an ESB, a registry, or SOA-oriented governance software. That, to me, raises a yellow flag.
David?
From our perspective, I mean, there's definitely something different to it. I mean, I know there's kind of this question on where it lies, and you're seeing that even in the vendors. You know, you have, you know, we use BEA quite a bit, and so BEA has acquired governance products, and you're seeing that from IBM coming from the stack up. You're also seeing folks that are getting into the traditional ERP for IT space, Mercury, BMC, buying governance tools and coming at it kind of from different directions. I know there's something different to it because in my own organization, a year ago, you know, IT governance was actually its own group reporting up to the CIO, and in the past year, my enterprise architecture group, that's where I got the end planning from, is that I've taken over the organizational planning and IT governance functions because of the importance of rethinking the way we're delivering applications, having a service orientation to them. And so certainly there is a different approach when you approach governance from an architecture perspective versus an absolute kind of demand management and financial control perspective, which was historically what governance was about, you know, IT steering committees, you know, business alignment versus kind of the whole end-to-end alignment.
Right.
Yes, well, you know, I think sort of to bring this all back to service-oriented architecture and governance, I think it's important to know that what makes an architecture that's oriented around services, which is another way of saying SOA, but backwards, right, than just a collection of web services, which are a set of interfaces to existing functionality, but those interfaces may be to functionality on existing architectures, interior, client-server, is the fact that we're trying to build these systems that to allow loosely coupled composite forms of application development and reuse. Meaning that we want to build capabilities such that they could be leveraged and reused multiple times in the organization in different environments of heterogeneity and in different business processes. From a business high-level perspective, this sounds like a great thing. Hey, I can meet my new needs with existing capabilities, or I can create new capabilities and they can be leveraged to a greater extent. However, this poses a serious challenge, specifically in the area of governance, meaning that how do I know that the people in my organization should be allowed to combine and compose different bits of functionality to meet some needs so that they comply not only with corporate regulations but governmental regulations, and also that they're doing it in a way that's consistent throughout the organization so we achieve some sort of predictability. So governance not only for compliance but governance for the sake of predictability and visibility and reliability. And when companies move from just a collection of web services or a collection of services to an architecture that's oriented around those services, that's when governance rears its head and makes itself a requirement, actually, of making SOA actually work in a loosely coupled composite environment.
Now, we always talk about SOA being the, you know, well, you can say a key for making our organizations adaptive and or agile. But then at the same time, any governance, may it be SOA or standard IT governance, or for that matter, financial governance, any kind of governance kind of comes with it like a string attached of making things kind of more red-taped and slow down. And so how do you eat the cake and have it too in this case, David?
Well, and it will. It absolutely will. So that was our experience in the first few years. You know, we took a very opportunistic approach to architecture, getting our initiatives and vision through projects, jumping in and working on projects. But what we found was, despite all the great things that we were doing, especially in an industry like ours, which is transforming to from analog to digital, different distribution models coming together, is that there's more stuff out there than a relatively small enterprise architecture team can ever catch up with. And so the command and control is not the answer. So we do have structures. You know, we do have an architecture board, which is really focused at the policy. We've got kind of working group structures and tiger teams, which go out and solve kind of point issues or deal with kind of the next generation of our G2E frameworks. But ultimately where we're going to is that we have to have kind of pick well-defined audit points within it. And the real key for us is end-to-end visibility, is that as an IT organization, we have to get away from command and control and move to end-to-end visibility. And that means that I want the actual, you know, we're a federated model, we actually support six different vice presidents of development, is that I want the architects and teams out there actually coming up with the innovations and approaching us about new services, new things that they can contribute. And the way to do that is to sell, go ahead and do that, and to sanction it to some degree, but in the past where we didn't have visibility into it, we now have things where you can have that ability to go out and develop and innovate, but we need to know about it. We need to take on the planning function. There has to be a respect for the fact if we see something that they're doing that replicates another part of the business, that when we step in and ask them to do something differently, that they're going to do that. And that's where the policies, the reviews, and the audit come in. So there is, in my mind, a real difference that you have to make in terms of operating as an edge organization versus command and control, or you will slow the business down.
Ron?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's important to realize that when you govern things, you are regulating uncontrollable growth. As you know, the governor on a steam engine is that those whirling balls above it that prevent the steam and the engine from building it to the point where it actually blows the engine apart. And that's kind of interesting metaphor for governance, is that we're trying to allow things to happen and the combustion to happen without happening at such a rate that it's unpredictable or unsustainable. So I think it's key. The things that are at odds is that the movement towards service-oriented architecture is a distributed movement, a decentralized movement, in part because we're trying to enable loosely coupled composition where the people who build the services may not necessarily be aware or should care how those services are consumed, But the problem is if we try to impose highly centralized governance, we're imposing a centralized infrastructure on a highly decentralized architecture, and it's basically at odds. So the federation idea is a key idea, which is that how do we allow the independent organizations to have independent control but to have centralized visibility, and maybe a distributed means of providing some control. And that's actually an emerging practice. I mean, it's hard to say if that's the best practice yet because we haven't really seen enough of it out there in the space to see if it's proven. But I would say what Peter has talked about David talked about here is key to making SOA work in sort of the larger scheme of things.
Peter?
Yeah, to those who are skeptical, I'd say the following. First of all, if you pick apart what is SOA, it's loosely coupled and has a lot of the properties of object orientation, which we first saw in the industry, say, 10 or 15 years ago. At that time, programmers were told to reuse code, and they really didn't, which is why there are an awful lot of C++ applications out there that are virtually unmaintainable and certainly aren't reusable. So we have a new opportunity, a new sheet of technology paper, as it were, but I would hope that IT management has learned that they're going to have to use carrots and sticks in order to drive this whole governance process. So as David said, no, you can't do it with the communist central planning model. That doesn't work. On the other hand, we do strongly believe that it is a best practice for companies that are bigger than, say, a couple hundred million dollars that really need to have an SOA architect's office so that they can put the architecture and the plans in place, take the various services, well, actually, design the big picture. How many services is a major bank going to have? And it might be a couple of hundred derived from, say, 1,200 to 1,500 applications. That central office needs to put things out and then get out of the way. But project teams need to be carefully managed, partly by giving them schedules that don't allow them to go off and reinvent new code. They should be in the assembly business, not in the new code business.
Now, when we talk about governance, why should it not be business governance? Because SOA by itself was brought forward so that you can get the best value out of services, which, of course, are leveraging IT to be performed. But at the same time, it is more like a business-driven, it should be a business-driven initiative. How much of governance that has been imposed on SOA to make it, you know, more predictable is being driven by the business executives versus, you know, washing away their hands and saying, hey, you IT guys, go ahead, take care of it?
Yeah, I think there's sort of a key insight here, and that there's actually really two different aspects of governance we're talking about here, which is one, governance of a service-oriented architecture, which means making sure that we're building an architecture and building services and composing them in such a way that they comply with governmental and corporate regulations and requirements and policies and all that sort of stuff, and doing it in a federated way that we're not actually limiting the growth and the composition of those services. But there's also the notion of SOA within the context of overall IT governance, that we have to basically somehow have this architecture help the other parts of the organization that may not be IT-centric. Maybe they're business roles in sales and finance, in marketing, in customer service, in manufacturing, or all the supply chain, all these other parts of the operation, even though they themselves are not the IT part of the operation, they're business processes themselves are implemented and consolidated through IT. And so we need to use SOA as a way to help facilitate overall governance and also have SOA act within the context of overall IT and corporate governance.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's listen to Peter and David about the same issue, where how much of this should be a business governance, if you will, versus just strictly an ITN or SOA governance. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.evolve.com today. Avall is a professional services firm with the mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avall can help your company, visit www.avall.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avall, making IT better. www.avall.com. Visit today. More and more business people recognize the importance of spirituality in their work. How do busy professionals discover what rings true for them? Embracing the Journey with Karen Humphrey-Salick explores what it means to be spiritually fulfilled in business and how to integrate spiritual direction into a career. Expert guests, authors, and inspiring speakers join Karen every week to discuss such issues as honesty, compassion, generosity, ethics, and integrity in the workplace. Take a positive step forward to greater life balance. Tune into Embrace the Journey with Karen Humphrey-Salick, broadcasting every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel, the bottom line in business talk.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is successful SOA adoption. What does it take? And our guests for today's show are Peter Kastner, David Buchholz, and Ron Schmelzer. Peter is the Vice President and Research Director, Enterprise Technology with Aberdeen Group. David is the Vice President, Enterprise Architecture and Planning, Sony Pictures Entertainment. And Ron is the Senior Analyst and Founder with Zapthink. Before the break, we were talking about business-driven governance, or rather business governance versus calling it IT governance, because SOA itself was brought forward and implemented and executed as a business need. So why are we just taking the geek side of it or the IT side of it? What is being done from the business standpoint? David.
Well, it's interesting in our industry. Ideally, we would love the business to do that, and it's a journey for us. It's in the context of a maturing IT organization, the past 5 years building IT credibility, and we have done some things where we've been able to reflect what's going on in the business because we see across our six different lines of business and get certain people involved. But also in our industry, we deal with a lot of creative executives. IT to them are the people that come and fix their computers and then get out of my office so I can call Moscow and see how my, next James Bond movie is underway. And that's where I want them, right? Because as great a job as we do in IT and we want to be a partner, whether they pick the right James Bond or, the next Spider-Man versus, the next movie that's not going to do so well, that's what really impacts our business. We need to keep that going. When it comes to, getting the business involved, we are doing some things to help. And really it involves, we do trying to pull together an IT steering committee now for the first time. But also it's finding more tactical, the champions in the business who also have cross-business support functions, like people that work in our sales servicing group that goes across the business, or information security or records management, in terms of looking at, how do we reflect what we see, get someone in the business to champion it, and then look at how they can go and actually to the actual business presidents to see how that could reflect their lines of business, even though they're each kind of rewarded for how well they do individually. And for us, the concept of on-demand entertainment, which is actually now crossing lines of business, by tying our SOA efforts to that, we're starting to get some of that attention. But it's still a journey. We probably have another 3 to 4 years left before we're really at that level of them getting deeply involved in an SOA discussion.
Peter? Thanks, David, because that means I've got 3 more years before as an analyst I have to find another topic to jump onto. I guess I put my comments as following. Within the IT department, you can't buy a product that will do IT governance and SOA governance. They're really two different things. You want IT governance, project management, policy, adherence, you would go to, say, a company like Computer Associates. If you want SOA governance, you end up with an Amber Point or one of the other SOA governance product companies. So it's really two different things. But from a business standpoint, I think a lot of very positive things are going on, that by building composite applications, by getting in front of the user organizations much earlier and with more depth, as David suggested a moment ago, I think some really radical changes are occurring organically as to how projects get done. And so perhaps if we have some time later, we can talk about just the whole development process and how it's changing. For the better, I might add.
Sure. Now, let's talk about the fact that, you know, when we are trying to get any such initiative on its way, we have to have the right people in place with the right so-called reporting structure and or org chart. So let's compare what an ideal org chart should look like for taking care of SOA governance or overall SOA management in a proper way. And let's compare that back with the IT governance and or business governance which might be there and in best practices that we might have implemented already, because IT governance should be mature by now in organizations. So if that were to be drawn out, what are the potential gaps that we might see? And, you know, is that okay to leave them as in place the same way, or we should do something to patch those holes? What is that going to do? What impact would that have in IT governance? Would there be a transition from IT governance folks to SOA, or both the same people would be doing both the tasks, if there is any overlap between the two roles and responsibilities and the people who are taking care of it?
Well, let me take a first stab there. I mean, so the real question is, you know, what part of the organization chart is missing in general for enterprise architecture? And this is a bit of a controversial area, because some companies have made a significant investment in what they believe to be enterprise architecture, but there really isn't an enterprise architecture part of the organization. In many cases, architecture comes out of the projects or out of the solutions they buy or out of the enterprise applications they implement, and they sort of get architecture as sort of a side effect of the things they do. But they're not really, there's no real organization that's providing sort of long-term planning. And by long-term, I don't mean long-term in the future, but planning that's effective now but has durable in the long-term. So I think most companies are actually missing an effective enterprise architecture organization that is really not a subservient to the application development part of the IT organization. And in many cases, it really needs to be called out separately, either a dotted line to the CIO or as a separate part of the organization, perhaps. And that's, I think, key missing and probably part of the a larger trend movement in the IT industry to separate architecture and development roles and the management of architecture and the management of development. From a governance perspective, it gets a little more complicated, because we do have corporate governance, IT governance, and the governance of service-oriented architecture, different things at different points to consider, and of course with also different capabilities for the people who are in charge of managing those roles. Very hard to get someone who's involved in corporate governance to manage architectural governance, and likewise somebody who's involved in IT governance as a whole to manage something that's a lot more complicated like corporate governance or something that's development specific. So what we're finding is probably a tiered governance organization, a enterprise architecture organization that's not subservient to development, and both of these things I think are moving, changing targets for the IT organization, but fortunately these are jobs that are not being outsourced, and I think there's a huge opportunity for folks that may have felt left out as companies have outsourced development roles to areas of lower cost. Architecture and governance roles are going to continue to be high-value roles that are critical to an enterprise organization and probably ones that they can continue to keep around.
Peter?
Yeah, good, Ron. I think there are a number of things going on here. First of all, as I suggested earlier, if you're a mid-sized organization or bigger, you better have an architecture department, because otherwise, as I suspect those 50% of the market I mentioned up top who are just doing web services, draw a line to where we're going to be in 5 years. What will happen is if you just do this do SOA on a project-by-project basis, you will end up with an accidental architecture. You will not gain the advantages of reusable services. You will not gain the lower costs of integration and software maintenance and all of the other benefits that we're seeing from the best-in-class organizations. So the fact is, you just can't back into this. Now, why are people backing in, as I said? doing web services and running around the orchard picking ripe fruit, because with the technology that we're talking about, web services specifically, allow organizations, programmers, to mash together applications so quickly and effectively that they can answer long-term needs from the business users. They get huge credit from the user organizations, which in many cases have big pain points that the IT department has not been able to handle on a project-by-project schedule basis. So that is a real issue. I absolutely agree with Ron to the extent of basically that the IT job role chairs are being reorganized on the deck. So people who know the organization, know its applications, and know the business processes that are out there will have new and exciting roles in an SOA world, because all the things that we've always done get done in the new world, but we've got whole new approaches to, for example, testing, application, maintenance, design, and other activities like BPM that are going to be brought into the palette of your skilled IT worker.
And the comment about accidental architectures, right? Even, you know, in our organization, we're very lucky. Enterprise architecture was started 4 years ago, but you still don't get to an ideal architecture. You know, it's not accidental anymore, but it's maybe, you know, sort of not quite on purpose either, with some of the exceptions and some of the things that happen in the business.
That's a journey.
Yeah, it's a journey. So, you know, I think, you know, where our organization, we've constantly been tweaked to. I mentioned that, you know, enterprise architecture, you know, I didn't mention the early days, but, you know, we were actually involved in project delivery for a while because we felt that we would never get the certain things done if we didn't own capital budgets and were running projects. We spawned our software development lifecycle, our QA organization. So there's been kind of tweaks. Some of that has now gone into more of a shared services organization where we're, you know, now we're taking on more of the governance role. So I'll walk you through real quick kind of how my group's organized.
And David, can you just quickly give us a picture of when did you get started? How long you been at this?
I've been with Sony Pictures 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Came there after 5 years at General Electric, so it's stepping from a very, you know, Six Sigma process-driven organization to the entertainment industry, which is not very process-driven. The architecture program was started about a year before that. IT in the entertainment industry is kind of fascinating in general. IT has always lagged behind market trends by about 4 or 5 years, even going back, you know, the first time they ever brought everyone together to get a standard PC image was 1996.
Mm-hmm.
In all the PCs that had bought in the organization, you know, as they were moving to client-server architecture in 97, 98 was when, you know, I worked at IBM at the time telling people to skip that generation. So there's always this kind of lagging technology, and there was also something that happened back in 1997 where they centralized IT, and that was an absolute disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And the business didn't get what they need. So in 2000, a new CIO came in, distributed it. Lines of business had their own architecture. And that got the business the systems they need, but costs in the organization started to skyrocket,
mm-hmm.
enhancements, overhead started to go up to the point where they couldn't meet the new needs. So about 2002, 2003 is when they started with a number of programs, a PMO, Enterprise Architecture Program, and it's kind of grown from there. So, and you know, the one thing our organization, we're not afraid to make organizational changes, so we've tweaked it quite a bit over the years in terms of, you know, at one point enterprise architecture had 60 people in it because we had assumed all the shared platform support, portals, databases. We ran the web methods program for a while,
mm-hmm.
for integration. But certainly as we incubated all this new technology coming in that would help us solve data and integration, which were kind of two number one problems in sync with things like an SAP implementation, we kind of moved that out into a shared services world. So where we are now is, you know, I've kind of got three columns, if you will, can picture it. One is kind of office of the CIO, running the office of the CIO. And I think that's important because, you know, we have a federated model of 6 divisional CIOs that report to that CIO.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have their own demand pipeline. We don't manage demand per se, but we help collect demand. We help analyze demand, look at where it impacts on the portfolio, help lead that into the budgeting process, help champion sourcing, offshoring programs, and have some role in development and skills and learning. So that's kind of an aspect. And it's not all governance, but the fact that we're involved in all those things, I think, help with governance. The second column will be kind of traditional enterprise architecture, off the CTO type of stuff. So that's all the roadmaps, strategic visions, business architecture. The third area would be technology assurance. So right now, production acceptance reports into our area. QA still has a very tight link, and they're always talking about moving that back in, but that gives us visibility to what's actually being done. And then governance kind of has two tracks, which is organizational governance, so architecture boards, procurement, Sarbanes-Oxley, and then the last one would be lifecycle governance. So we have 5 points along the lifecycle where we have reviews, and you know, there's different people. And I can go back into that after the break, but that's, you know, right now that alignment seems to be working out pretty well for us in terms of organizationally approaching our group.
Thanks, David. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and David can maybe add some more comments after we come back. But at the same time, we would also like to extend this conversation in terms of SOA being, by very nature, kind of loosely coupled, approach to integrating applications and data, etc. And that could bring some vulnerabilities which we need to handle. And given that the security and compliance mandates that we deal with, how much is being taken care of in this SOA governance models and or IT governance which is being proposed or being used at today, and what kind of tightening up needs to be done for that to work and for meeting our compliance needs. So let's stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with the mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT better. www.aval.com. Visit today.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is successful SOA adoption. What does it take? And our guests for today's show are Peter Kastner, David Buchholz, and Ron Schmelzer. Peter is the Vice President and Research Director, Enterprise Technology with Aberdeen Group. David is the Vice President, Enterprise Architecture and Planning, Sony Pictures Entertainment, and Ron is the Senior Analyst and Founder with ZapThink. Before the break, we touched the point where we were trying to compare the org charts of what would it take for us to have a successful SOA governance as compared to what IT governance best practices suggest and if there are any gaps. And David was to add some more comments on that, and thereafter we were to talk about the compliance mandates and the security mandates that we deal with every day, and SOA being the result of some loosely coupled integration points and also control, which would basically be creating some vulnerabilities which we have to deal with. How far are we in terms of our SOA governance model and control model which will allow us to meet those compliance needs? David?
Yeah, so, you know, I was talking about how our group has really moved out of the implementation side into really focusing on governance control, business alignment, you know, the audit process through the governance process. The heartache, which I think is the other part of the original question, was, you know, now we're not in that. You know, we're so there's this risk, you know, perceived and real, of becoming ivory tower, or even, you know, the implementation team saying, well, if you're not here to help me on my project, you know, what value are you playing and why do I need to listen to you? So that's always a struggle and part of the tweaking of the organization we're constantly doing. You know, when we did SOA, tried to move into it, there was many different levels, right? There's framework levels, there's back office integration, there's real SOA business services. But for us, there was also a methodology that we wanted to implement. And so we actually, you know, kind of rededicated ourselves to RUP a little bit, some tweaks in terms of additional steps when you're thinking about designing a business service. And there was also a tool side to it. So we, you know, in our organization, we actually switched to the complete Borland set, making sure all of our code was going through Star Team for versioning and getting some product quality reports out of that. And when you talk about security, that was also a piece of it, is that our kind of view on it is that we can't, in a federated model, we need to provide, idiot-proofing is not quite the right word, but it's sort of, it needs to be, you know, sort of like Coca-Cola within an arm's reach. And so we need to make those services part of the development methodology. So when it comes to vulnerability, we have a close partnership with information security. In our organization, we actually moved information security out of IT and into the business to focus on digital asset protection, which is core to our business.
Sure.
And at one point, I actually had a security architect that worked for me that moved over there. But we still work with them in terms of taking the requirements and baking those services into our development methodology. So, for example, we use Mercury for testing. We've integrated vulnerability testing from Spy Dynamics into that. So now all applications that are being developed with a service-oriented orientation have to go through that methodology, and they sort of get that testing and vulnerability baked in, and then working upstream through competency centers we put in place. So we have a security competency center to help educate developers on managing vulnerability and risk as they go through the process. And that's really, so in addition to governance in my own organization, there's an aspect of our role in terms of overall organizational development.
Well, great. Well, I sort of wanted to sort of take on here the tack of the security and vulnerability and reliability as a whole. And that's been a large part of the research and publications we've been doing at Zapthink for the past few months around SOA quality. And part of the real challenge of doing security and quality is the fact that we are dealing with a loosely coupled composite environment where we have a lot of control through metadata, and we're not trying to impose central logic because we're trying to move away from tightly coupled centralized integration and therefore centralized control. And the real problems come from the fact that if I'm trying to compose two different systems together, each of those systems might have a different notion of identity and a different notion of policy. And the fact that I'm trying to compose them together raises a problem of trying to figure out, well, whose policy takes over and whose identity takes over, and then we have to have enterprise identity management, which a lot of companies haven't really made a significant investment in. And so we have to move to where SOA actually requires strong investment in enterprise identity and policy management, but also requires a much more iterative and continuous style of testing, because deploying a service as a service interface doesn't actually mean that it may work, because you may have a composition or some policy or some schema or some metadata that you put on top of it that actually prevents it from being used in certain cases, even though the underlying service implementation may work. So we're moving away from sort of a traditional waterfall style methodology of software development where it's build, test, deploy, manage, to much more build, test, build, test, build, test, where deployment is basically an aspect of test, and you're continuing to do that. It's highly iterative, and I think that's what companies are struggling with, in part, in addition to SOA. It's not just exposing service assets and securing them and managing them, but it's this whole new life cycle for managing services in a continuous fashion.
Yeah, this is Peter, and I think this is one of the big new problems that we're creating with SOA, and that the issue really has to be laid down very clearly. I mean, as I look at the Wall Street Journal today talking about retail crime is a $37 billion a year problem in the United States in 2005, and by the way, my point is that store employees are responsible for 48% of that, so $15 billion out of 31. All SOA, or most SOA, goes on inside the firewall, and therefore you almost need to start with a clean sheet of security paper and not trust and verify, but trust nothing unless you have to. By that, what does that mean from a technology standpoint? Well, I think you must look at encrypting all of your traffic as it goes through your network, message by message. You need to verify it. You need to make sure that the services is in compliance. And you need to do some serious thinking about how to control the activities of the IT employees now, who in many ways have a much easier opportunity to create situations where they can create fraud. By the way, it's not just IT people, but the ability to create, for example, web services with open standards means that power users, of which there are many in most big companies, such as David's, which has moved IT out to the line of business. So I think this is one of the big problems that's yet to be completely solved. We've loosely coupled. We've broken down many of the strictures, as it were, and this is the problem, security and compliance, that we have to deal with.
Let's talk about the effectiveness that you might see because of the weakest link issue being brought down, where people who are you are trying to connect with. SOA was, in a way, created for that purpose. While, Peter, you said that 48% is being used internally, we hope that percentage of people or organization using with outside entities would increase far more. And as that happens, it could very well become a weakest link issue because we can control what we want to do. We could have the best practices in our own company, but what about the partners that you're going to deal with? Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do about that, or what are we trying to do? We are only going to partner who has got a better SOA and not, you know, they may be best business partners, but if they don't have SOA, do we back out?
Well, ideally, when you create a service-oriented architecture and you're crafting those services and you're building the policies, you're not thinking necessarily when you build the service about how it's being consumed. That's part of the activity of building loosely coupled services. You're trying not to think of the consumption, which means that you're really building services in sort of a location-independent way. However, that being said, there are some services that are not meant to be consumed by parties, and that's maybe outside a firewall or outside of a specific organization, or maybe without even outside a particular process context, in which case it's the policies that are applied to that service. So we need strong policy definition and strong policy enforcement to actually make these location-independent services comply with governance and other corporate policies. Now, when we extend that to third parties, let's say we are exposing these service assets, we want to involve third parties, external organizations, entities in a business process that's incredibly critical, we have to think much more granularly about the services that they're trying to access. It's not a matter of can they access the service or can they not access the service, but also what kinds of information can they access through the service, you know, securing things down at the element level. You know, a good example of this is that there's been a lot of problems in distributed manufacturing and supply chain environments where an organization, maybe let's say based in North America or Europe, may outsource its manufacturing to, let's say, China or some other region, and the notion of intellectual property is a little different in different geographies, and the enforcement of intellectual property is a little different. And there have been a lot of problems with companies who have taken extra production runs of what's highly proprietary manufacturing processes and manufacturing diagrams and use them in ways which are clearly in violation of intellectual property regulations. But the problem is that the technology has enabled a much more wide distribution of this intellectual property, and the enforcement of the policies hasn't kept pace. And I think with SOA, we have to keep pace. Just because the services can be accessible and the information accessible through those services, we have to have strong policy enforcement to prevent this sort of information from really becoming a problem to the organization. And imagine, David, that must be an issue for Sony. I mean, as you have third parties involved, you have real intellectual property you have to protect as well.
Yeah, and we already are in that kind of model. So, you know, they're not, you know, full, you know, highfalutin web servers, et cetera, but you think of basic things like messaging and file service, which, you know, are part of our service catalog. We're already in a mode where we're more concerned about what's going out than what's coming in. So we look for large files. We look for things coming through. And so our approach, in addition to policy, is there's also a proxy between us and external parties, as well as a inspect type of operation. And I think you'll see some of the same type of stuff. You know, we do it for things like instant messaging in a creative environment. We don't have an enterprise instant messaging solution because we tried to. It didn't work because everyone needs to connect to various production companies, talent that may be on Yahoo, MSN, whatever. So our solution to that was buying appliances that basically inspect every type of connection going out and tracking, audit, logging, et cetera. So I think it becomes a real issue, especially where you have cases where the services aren't enabling things like IP exchange, you'll also see a market for products that inspect at the edge and even proxy those relationships between people.
you'd like to add something?
Yeah, a couple things. Clearly, SOA creates an opportunity to tie in business partners and customers in new and exciting ways by making processes and data available that we've never had before. But it also creates situations where people can and will be anywhere on the Internet, and you know what that means. It also creates enormous potential difficulties in trying to deal with production snafus. I mean, my own example is that because of a bug in a personal finance program I used, my bank started debiting my mortgage every day until I got a phone call from a friend who was a bank manager. You know, that can do a real number on you. And then trying to debug it was almost impossible.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and see what we can do that while we are trying to implement the SOA and make the best out of it, how can we also save money in that whole process? While we are trying to put SOA governance in place, is there a way for us to automate some of them for some of these governance and control tasks? What is the benefit and what are the risks that which might get introduced just because of such automation? So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with the mission to help companies align information technology with their business objectives through its full line of staffing and outsourcing services. Whether it's hiring top technology talent or developing mission-critical business solutions, we back it up with an unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT better. www.aval.com. Visit today.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjog Gal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is SOA adoption, successful SOA adoption. What does it take? And guests for today's show are Peter Kastner, David Buckles, and Ron Schmelzer. Peter is the Vice President and Research Director, Enterprise Technology with Aberdeen Group. David is the Vice President, Enterprise Architecture and Planning, Sony Pictures Entertainment. And Ron is the Senior Analyst and Founder with Zapthink. We were to talk about SOA automation, if at all that is possible, just so that we can reduce the total cost of ownership. And as part of that governance being put in place, what kind of risk that we might get introduced in the whole, because of this automation, and are there any other gotchas that we might see? So, please go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, sure. First of all, SOA governance software products are relatively new because SOA itself is relatively new. But the large companies that have gone out and invested in it are finding that indeed it is the right approach. It is reducing total cost of ownership, and it's helping to improve the overall effectiveness and the overall governed set of SOA as necessary. So I think it's a good idea in principles. The risks, I don't believe, are particularly large, and they're no different than any other automated, semi-automated business process. So I would turn to my panelists and say, have I got it right?
David?
Well, I'll just echo it. I mean, I think if you have processes, it's like any other process. You're going to look for ways to optimize and digitize your process. In terms of automating, you know, so much of what I consider SOA governance in my organization has nothing to do with the technical aspects. It's with the people, it's with the business. And so that's the part that certainly you're not going to be able to automate any of that for quite a long time until all of us have been automated out of the business altogether. So, I echo it that I think there's no real risk in terms of implementing the solutions, but there's still a lot to be done manually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say further add to that that, you know, there's really four aspects of governance overall, much of which is actually not technology specific, as David just mentioned. I mean, there's, you know, encoding policies, there's transmitting and enforcing those policies, there's providing visibility into compliance and mitigating deviations, and then basically helping to the business to basically plan around those policies, especially as things change. And, you know, a lot of those are just activities of people. And you know, one of the things that we learned, and actually something that's one of the key parts in our recent book, which is called Service Oriented or Be Doomed, is actually a business book. And the first thing we conclude is that it's much harder to change the way people, actually just much harder to change people and their behavior than it is to change the technology they use. And
amen.
Sometimes people just, you know, they do things because that's the way they're done, rather than that's the way they should be done.
Heck, I've seen many systems that were designed because Jenny and payroll did it that way.
So let's talk about the fact that the standards that we are always scared of is that whenever we try to tout something new out, there would be 20 other companies which would bring out their own best practices. And while there may be some overlap, but sometimes there are a lot of differences as well. So starting from an organizational standpoint, David, this is a question that's rightfully, you're the chosen one for this, that how would you as an organization, or how would any other organization ever choose the path of a set of best practices proposed by a given entity, given that there could be 20 other entities proposing another flavor, to pick that one up versus another and try to go that path in terms of SOA governance or SOA adoption?
Yeah, you do the best you can. I mean, it's, you know, certainly we've even experienced that in various levels, especially in our actual frameworks. You know, especially in the Java space, is some things that we went with early on that were a little bit proprietary, or we built our own. Now the open source community is coming out with frameworks that can do exactly the same thing. I think the real thing there is there's this traditional thing in IT that once you've invested certain aspects of money into certain systems, is that you have to stick with them no matter what and make that investment pay off. I think in a world where the standards are emerging and you keep going, you know, it makes the procurement up front that more important. You know, get a good deal for your company. Don't spend huge amounts of money on various pieces of software. You know, have the ability that if, you know, for instance, our BPM engine, we made a selection at the best point in time and went in that direction, but we're a BEA shop, and BEA went and bought someone else. So now do we switch or do we stay? You know, those are the types of questions that, you know, in the past, you know, you wouldn't even put on the table. But I think you need to be able to look at those standards and have that in mind, that the only thing that definitely, you know, the only thing that you can ensure is going to change is that things will change. And so you have to know that going in and minimize your exposure and be ready to move if needed.
Mm-hmm. Sort of further to that, I mean, you know, to paraphrase, Guy Kawasaki wrote a recent book about innovation. And in that he goes, you know, the key to good innovation is eat like an elephant and poop like a bird. And what that really means is that, you know, iterate very rapidly. You know, consume things with real gusto, but then move quickly to basically dispose of things that aren't working. And in the service-oriented architecture context, that basically means don't make large commitments, especially IT commitments, that'll basically lock you in, because the whole idea is that life is continuously changing, the business is continuously changing. So there really are two different levels of standards. There are the standards we should define, you know, the technology standards, how do you interact with the service, how do you define the service, how do you secure it, how do you compose it into business process, how do you do all those various different aspects of interacting and working with services. But I would say those are going to continue to be in flux, going to be largely driven by the vendors who are producing products to comply with those standards. But there's a whole other level of standards around best practices and methodologies, which are what are the standards by which companies should define those services, by which they should govern those services, by which they should go about thinking about how to continue to do that service life cycle around management of versioning and change management. They're really trying to standardize processes within organizations. OASIS just ratified their SOA reference model. It's fairly abstract, but it's a good start. And one of the things that we're actually doing at Zapthink is we're trying to actually credential architects through something called a licensed Zapthink architect program, because frankly, it's very hard to, when you're hiring a new person who has this word SOA on their resume, you have no idea what to expect. And you can talk to them about the technologies, about what they're using, but that's not really what SOA should mean on a resume. What SOA should mean on a resume is a set of methodologies and practices. Because you want to be able to hire somebody, even though they may be familiar with a different set of technologies, they may still have skills that are applicable into a company with real architecture.
Peter?
Well, just quickly, the standards are going to vary dramatically industry by industry. the brokerage firm is totally different from the hospital, from a regulatory, which drives down into the individual company standards. So you'll find help in your vertical market associations, like the Securities Industry Association for brokerage firms, but you won't find a lot in the software space. However, stay tuned for industry-oriented frameworks that are being built out and thought out by companies like IBM. That could radically change how applications are built and doom a lot of legacy applications as well.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would really like to thank you, Peter, David, and Ron, for sharing your thoughts and insights about how organizations can actually adopt and benefit from SOA through effective strategies, which also includes governance and control. Now that we have been successful in proving the worth of SOA, that is service-oriented architecture, the next challenge is how to make it pervasive, to get the best out of it, to get the best ROI, and basically what it means is how to ensure successful adoption. Well, the word is out there that SOA governance will take care of it. With multiple standards and methodologies being proposed to tame this beast while dealing with compliance mandates, it is easier said than done. What is your organization doing to ensure successful SOA adoption? Please send us your story at views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. Please join Sanjog Gall at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for another of CIO Talk Radio.